Hello, everyone. In today's episode, we're going to talk about sleep habits, sleep hygiene, and the low-hanging fruit for you to make the most out of your recovery. Please enjoy.
Welcome to the Perfect Workout Podcast, where fitness meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of the Perfect Workout. I'm joined by Jim Keen, our Director of Training. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
All right, welcome to episode 10. Today, we're going to talk about everybody's favorite subject, which is sleep. That's right. And we're going to get rid of the quote-unquote hero badge of, yeah, I only slept 4 hours and then crushed life. And so I'm better
than
you.
Got up at 4 o'clock, drank a jar of urine. That's time to eat nails for breakfast.
That's right. So we talked about this in the last few episodes. We're going to go into some good tips today. I think the cool, important thing about the tips around sleep is that the ones that really, really work are free or close to it. So, Jim, when it comes to recovery and when it comes to that, again, that 80-20, the thing that matters the most, why don't we dive into sleep? Why don't you tell us a little bit about sleep, maybe some things we don't really know, maybe some preconceptions that you should get rid of, and then get into some of the hacks here.
So, in the general sense, sleep can be understood in our three-step process. It's part of step two, the recovery step. It's actually also involved in step three, the adaptation, producing the result, because everything you want from exercise is produced during sleep. Supposing that you did it right. And so the idea when you think about sleep is kind of like in step one with the exercise, the active ingredient is the contraction with the muscle, the quality of the contraction. So with sleep and recovery, the active ingredient, it's sleep. If you're a normal kind of person, and let's say you live to age 90, you will have spent something like 30 years asleep. So it's got to be important, right?
Okay.
If it could be done away with, evolution would have done away with it because we're, of course, vulnerable to predation. Predators can find it. But sleep is bad for us.
It's not helping the survival side, unless it is.
So it has to be so good that it gets maintained. If somebody could sleep 2 hours a night and survive, they would have had a competitive survival advantage and we would be their ancestors. But we're descended from those who needed 7-8 hours a night. So we know it's important because biology has retained it. So next, I want to talk about the idea of hygiene. When you think about hygiene, you think of brushing your teeth and showering and soap, cutting your nails. Hygiene, a good definition for it, is that without which the system would break down. It's not that you're working steadily towards super teeth or super clean pits or super smell. Well, I am, but normal people aren't. My pheromones aside, the purpose of hygiene is so that it doesn't degrade whatever the system is that you are maintaining. So sleep is the same way. There are certain things you must do, and you don't get super sleep. But what happens is if you fail to do these certain things, if you fail to perform your sleep hygiene, things start to break down. So some things about sleep hygiene. Timing is arguably more important than amount, than quantity. So we have this cycle that happens. Our biology runs in a cycle that is about a day, circa dia. You could call it a circadian, really. It's like a rhythm, but it's about a day. It's like circa 1 day. Like that's a circadian rhythm, to coin a new phrase. So the idea is, how does the body know what time it is? Well, it can sense from its environment. And the way it senses, the primary way, is from the sun. It also uses temperature, but light is the primary thing. In fact, in the research, the thing that happens in the morning, that starts the morning, is called the Zeitgeber, the light giver. Zeitgeber. Get to the Java, the Zeitgeber. Get the sun in your eyes. So Arnold knows about starting his day. Yeah. Yeah, this is your last day on the podcast, by the way. We'd like to ask you politely to leave. So the idea is, in Ocean's 11, you know, when they all synchronize their watches and they're like, all right, let's all synchronize watches. This happens at this time. You do this at this time. You do this at this time. That's exactly how it is for every gland that you have. You get light in the morning. That's how sleep starts. Light in the morning from the sunrise. The Zeitgeber. It's the first thing that happens that coordinates all the glands in your body to do their job when it is the time to do their job. So that's the first thing that happens. And if you think about what we want to happen in deep sleep, all the wonderful, wonderful hormonal releases that we want to happen at 1 or 2 a.m. in deep sleep, those, and we're talking about growth hormone, we're talking about testosterone, progesterone, estrogen, so much happens overnight to aid recovery. All the We'll talk a little bit later about the glymphatic drainage from your how your brain cleans itself during deep sleep. That all is the end result of a process that starts 16, 17 hours earlier. So as soon as the sun hits your eyes in the morning, doop, timer starts. And then if you honor your circadian rhythm throughout the rest of the day, finally you get the payoff in the middle of the night. But it started when you saw the light in the morning. And if you don't see the light in the morning, you'll still get some of that. Like, it's not an all or nothing. It's a very robust system. We're very adaptable, but this is how it works. And so the first thing is the timing, the circadian rhythm. Part of the circadian rhythm is when you go to bed. When should you go to bed? Well, a couple hours after the sunset, basically, is the answer. If you stay up later, the problem becomes all that good stuff I mentioned, all the things we need to have happen for our body composition, for our mental health, for our lower inflammation, that release of hormones at 1 to 2 at night, it only occurs if you have been asleep for 2-3 hours at least at that point. If you go to bed at 1 a.m. and you wake up at 9, you've had 8 hours of sleep, but you missed out on them. It's like the 3-point competition for basketball at the All-Star game, the 3-point competition, you have the money ball and the regular. So I used to tell clients, every hour of sleep you get before midnight, that's a money ball. That's worth 2. Every hour of sleep you get after midnight, that's 1. And so 10 to 6 is not the same as 1 to 9. Completely different, even though they're both 8 hours. Timing matters almost more than quantity, if you think about it like that. Now, it's not literally like that, but it's a good model to use. You know. So how do you do it? Okay, Jim, I'm going to go to bed a couple hours after the sunset. And so is that it? Is that the whole thing? Sunlight in the morning and go to bed? That's the start. That's the low-hanging fruit. Next, some sleep hygiene over how to get the best possible sleep. So there's a couple things. And you've probably heard a lot of these, but these are all in one place. So first, it should be a pitch black room. You should have blackout curtains. You do whatever you need to do to black out the room. And you don't have any night lights. You don't have any lights from TVs or phones or anything like that. Pitch black room.
Yeah. Isn't there a study around like a small blue light or something like that on the back of somebody's leg or?
Yeah. Yeah. So they were testing melatonin release, and they were trying to decide. They knew that exposing someone to light at night restricted the release of melatonin. They would measure it in someone's blood and less had been released into the circulation. And they found that shining, I believe it was a green light at the back of someone's knee with like a little pen light, caused a statistically significant reduction in the release of melatonin later that night, which is insane.
So when you say dark room, you don't mean just cover your eyes with a mask.
You mean a dark room.
Yeah, a dark room. Yeah, it should be pitch black. If you open and close your eyes, you shouldn't notice any difference. Next thing, you got to sleep cool. The research is really clear on this. And the sweet spot seems to be around 67 degrees, 68 degrees, something like that. Your body, your core body temperature drops when you sleep. And it's only at these lower temperatures that your body can perform certain processes. So it can't do that if the room is too hot or if you're covered up too much. So that is a requirement for a lot of these things.
And let's throw up a flag here. This is one of those things that if you're going to spend some money on a device, which we talked about earlier, this is a good place. It can be challenging, depending on where you are in the world, to get your room cool enough. But luckily, there are a lot of cool devices out there, chili pads, fans, all kinds of things.
Yeah, bedjet.
Yep, bedjet to get your room and your body cool enough. So if you're going to spend some money and you want to hack something, this is the place to start.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather have someone do this than buy some supplement they saw at a conference or, you know, heard about. So yeah, spending money to invest in your sleep, it's a third of your life. So money invested in sleep is money well spent. The next thing, so you got a pitch black room. It's very cool. It happens after a couple hours after sundown and you see the sun in the morning. Paradoxically, something else that helps sleep is daytime sunlight. Now, a lot of people, we mentioned melatonin. Everyone sort of, the limit to their knowledge on melatonin is that it's the sleepy night hormone and it's just that dark time. And so true, but it's released from the pituitary, but it's not built there at the time the lights go out. What happens is you have ocular melatonin. Sunlight hits your eyeball during the day and melatonin begins to be produced in the eye hours and hours and hours before it's released later that night. So if you fail to get enough daylight, enough sunlight and daylight in your eyes, starting at sunrise and through the day, you then, it's like pulling back your bow. If you only pull it back this far, it only shoots that much. If you pull it back, much more forceful on the other end. So the more melatonin you can build ocularly, it travels backwards. And yes, it's released by the pituitary gland, but that's not, or maybe it's the pineal gland. Am I getting that backwards? You have to fact check this. We'll fact check this. We'll correct it in the notes. So it might be pineal. I think I messed up. Anyway, the point is one of the pineal glands. And so you want to get daylight. It helps your sleep is the point.
And if somebody's going to just get started here, right? People are busy. Some of them work in a cave, stuff like that. Again, what's the 80-20? Like how much
shout out to the bears listening.
That's right.
I work in a cave. I work so hard in this cave.
Like in just to get started in the morning, how much time do I need to spend outside before I can get my day started?
If you can get daylight for 10 minutes in your eye, great, great. And it's a non-linear effect. So it's the small hinges swing big doors thing. So one doesn't equal one. A little bit has a great marginal utility. So going for 20 minutes isn't twice as good, but it still is better, 30 minutes and so forth. So that first 10 minutes, if you can stay longer and more is better, but there's diminishing returns, even though there are returns. So I, you know, 10 minutes daylight in the morning, you just need to let your body know what time it is in the day.
And same, if you can take a lunch break and even if it's 20 minutes and you can just sit outside in the sun, this thing's going to be exponentially better than, well, I can't do it, back to episode two or three here perfectly. So I'm not going to adhere.
Yeah. And then another really important thing regarding sleep and probably one of the big prime movers, low hanging fruit, no glowing rectangles for as long as you can stand it before bed.
You just lost everybody.
Yeah. So I just glowing rectangles is a catch-all. Mine's a square. So what happens is your body responds to light signal. When light hits your eye, it tells your body what time of day it is. Our phones, our iPads, our televisions, all of our glowing rectangles we know and love emit a light that spikes in the blue range and without the yellows, oranges, and reds to balance it out. So it's alien light. And it's like, they call it Allen, alien light at night or artificial light at night. And you want to avoid Allen at all costs because what happens is it's, let's say it's 10 p.m. and you're ready to go to bed. And then I got a reel from that one friend we all have who just keeps shooting us reels even after it's bedtime. And you look and all of a sudden your brain says, hey guys, I just saw some blue light. Like it's powerful blue light. It is 11 a.m. I swear to you, it's 11 a.m. So let's not release the melatonin. Let's not pulse the growth hormone and the testosterone. It's not time for that. Let's not do all these other things that happen during sleep. Let's not do that because it's the daytime.
So is there any evidence that, let's say you're just forced to, right? This happens to me all the time, actually. I get handcuffed and I'm forced to look at a TV. Yeah, with my kids and things like that in the evening. Is there any evidence there's some effective, like these glasses, things like that, that might help with some of that balance if you are going to be, I'm not sort of looking for an excuse to just sit on your phone with some glasses here, but I see people wearing them all the time.
So I've had since 2013, I've had pairs of red and orange glasses that are used exactly for that purpose. So if I have to look at my phone or my work computer or something after dark, especially in the winter when it gets dark early, the red glasses are great. And you don't need the fully the goggles because there's something called angle of incidence. It's your eye where it looks matters. So just because some light is getting in through here, good enough is good enough. Ideally, you'd be out in the jungle somewhere and there's no electricity, but we're not. And we're in life. We're in modern life. So it really does help. It's a big help. And you'll notice in your sleep scores, in other things, if the sun is out or if the sun is down, red glasses are on.
Cool.
And that's just the way I roll. And then even during the day, I don't ever want to look at alien light because the spike in blue light from electric, from glowing rectangles, it degrades things about your eye, which is the only part of your brain that's exposed to the air. Everyone thinks your eyes and your brain are different organs. They're the same organ. They're connected. They're the same. So just the optic nerve goes straight back. It's the same thing. So when you're looking at screens during the day, it behooves you to have those lighter, like the yellow glasses. They still block a lot of harmful blue spectrum without the red. That's the problem. Roy G. Biv altogether. That's the sun. Sun has blue light too. Isn't that bad? I thought you said blue light was bad. It's like apples have fruit. And earth, apples have fruit. Apples have sugar. I thought you said sugar is bad. No, apples have a lot of water and fiber with them as nature intended. I thought you said blue light was bad. It has orange, yellows, and reds to counteract that blue, violet, and ultraviolet, and they work together for that purpose. And we're, of course, descended from those who could make very good use of that light. Otherwise, they wouldn't be our ancestors. So the idea is we want to limit our exposure to the fake light. So when I have to look at light during the day, glasses go on, it's just fine. And so far, it's 20/20 vision. I've still been crushing.
So we know what sleep is.
Who said that? Oh, sorry, I was just kidding. Just kidding, of course.
We know why it's important. We know about the sleep hygiene. Let's talk about something real quick. So first, let's go back and do a quick rundown. All right, so we are really focused on the circadian rhythm here. We're focused on that timing, right? I think you kind of really alluded to the idea that, of course, you can't go to bed at, let's say, a couple hours after the sun's down and then wake up at 2 a.m. either. So the amount of time in bed seems to matter in the research, 7 to 9 hours or something like that.
Yeah, whenever they do... They do these studies where they lock people in pitch dark rooms at the perfect temperature just to see how much sleep a human needs. And they trap them in these rooms for 14 hours in the pitch black. And at first, everyone's sleep deprived. So at first, they're sleeping for 11, 12 of those hours. And then it's 10, and then it's 9. They pay back, they get normalized. And it ends up between 7 and 8. And as the head researcher, Matt Walker, who wrote a great book, Why We Sleep, as he put it, there's a possibility that there are people out there who can function optimally at 4 hours. It's just that over hundreds of studies and hundreds of thousands of study participants, we've just never discovered them.
Yeah, so don't gamble on that one.
No,
yeah.
It's like, I only need 4 hours. I'm not interested in what you can survive. I'm interested in what's best. I don't want what you can tolerate. I want what serves you best. And typically, it's somewhere not less than 7 and not more than 8 hours.
So... good. And I'm going to bed at this time. I've got my room nice and cold. I got rid of a heavy blanket there. I'm making sure it's completely dark. I got some really cheap on Amazon or something, blackout curtains, etc. Focusing on my sleep. So I'll make an assumption here. This goes back to a conversation we had in many episodes before this. It's this idea of like, let me just get my ducks in order and then. So I got to be careful because you're talking about sleep being recovery. And I need to recover because I'm exercising. So maybe I should get my sleep good first and then I'll exercise. But I'm assuming you might have something to say about exercise helping with sleep quality as well.
Correct. So there's something called sleep pressure. So we all heard about ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And we learned about that in science class and chemistry. It's the energy currency of our bodies. When it's combusted for energy, it becomes energy diphosphate. And so adenosine is then extracted from that. And there's adenosine receptors in the brain. When the adenosine breaks through the blood-brain barrier, travels to the brain, it docks to the adenosine receptor. And when enough of these adenosine receptors have adenosine on them, that's you fall asleep. It makes you drowsy. It makes you fall asleep. And then they all release and off you go. So the act of burning ATP is what makes you drowsy. And so through the day, this accumulates. In fact, that's how coffee works. There's no stimulant in it. The caffeine doesn't work as a stimulant. The caffeine docks to the adenosine receptors so that sleep pressure cannot accumulate. You feel not drowsy, but it's not because there's a stimulant like a methamphetamine or some sort of pharmaceutical. It's just that the adenosine receptor activity has been thwarted for the moment. And half-life is about 8 hours. Half of it's still left in the system. You can eventually fall asleep. So the idea is if you exercise, if you burn ATP by doing intentional, high quality, potent muscular contractions, you'll burn ATP very rapidly. The ATP will become adenosine, will travel to the brain, will dock to these receptors. And by the time it's bedtime, you will have a lot of sleep pressure built up. You'll feel drowsy. You'll feel spent. You'll feel like going to bed. And you won't have that rumination where you hit the pillow and you just keep thinking about stuff and you can't really get drowsy. That'll really help with that. So they work together. The sleep helps recover from the workout, but the workout helps you get to sleep as well.
So, and then a quick side note here is that it is, I don't know what the timing is on all of these devices, but in my experience, it's important. Coffee's a good one. Coffee's fine, but you don't want to drink it too late.
Sure.
Same with exercise. Same with some of these other sort of acute stimulants that if you do it too late,
even something like cold exposure.
Exactly.
Cold exposure has its place, but if you do it too late, the epinephrine and the norepinephrine and even the dopamine spike that
might
keep you up a little bit. It's like, but Jim, I thought you said the temperature, doesn't the body temperature go down at night? I was like, Yeah, but it does it on its own. In fact, you probably want to do like a sauna or a red light thing before bed, because when you exit, all your radiators are radiating heat, and then it
overcompensates,
gets,
really.
Correct. Yep. It gets all the heat out and allows you to cool down, so long as you don't get in pajamas and blankets and store the heat. So it's kind of the reverse, because when you get in the cold, well, now your body heats up and it's not going to cool back down for a while.
So it's kind of this idea that it's not just the dose that can make the poison. It can be the timing.
Timing.
Yep. And so be careful with that stuff. That happens a lot. People are like, I had a cold plunge. I'm really jazzed and this thing's, and all it's supposed to do is make me healthy. But if something's getting away in the way of these first principles, if something's getting in the way of you exercising, the injury, the knee pain, et cetera, something's getting in the way of sleep, then it's not healthy.
Or it's like, I work a lot. The only time I could do my strength training is 1:30 in the morning.
Right.
Interrupting, like completely destroying your sleep just to get your lift in. Maybe you need to reorganize some things in your schedule. That's counterproductive. It's one step forward, three steps back.
Anything else you want to wrap up on sleep? Any other?
It's everything
things?
I know, man. There's nothing left.
I figured. Yeah, we drained you there.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't take much. Yeah, that's all I know.
Awesome. We'll get out there, get some sleep. We gave you permission.
Yeah. Get some sleep. Go to bed.
That's right. All right, man. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Perfect Workout Podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at theperfectworkout.com for more resources, or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make fitness simple, empowering, and a part of life well lived. See you next time.